This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, sitting in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. Most elections have a defining issue. Jobs, the economy, healthcare, all pretty traditional. But here and around the world, climate change is increasingly a key consideration. Many thought this issue would determine the result of Australia's elections. Millions voted this weekend, and while many candidates who focused on climate change won, it didn't have the impact that had been expected. So, what happened? James Glenday is a correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. James, great to have you on 1A.
G'day, Sasha.
James, what should we know about the basics of elections in Australia?
Well, they're very different from elections here in the United States, in particular because our head of state is the Queen, who just happens to live in England, and our Prime Minister, the most powerful person in Australian politics, is chosen by the party that has the biggest numbers in the House of Representatives. So if you were to look at the American system, currently our Prime Minister is the equivalent of Nancy Pelosi because it's the party which controls that lower house, and that is where all the focus is.
So as I mentioned earlier, many said that climate change was going to be the defining issue in this election. True?
It's an interesting one. It was a big issue, and there were a lot of other issues. Tax cuts, welfare reform, a whole heap of other issues. Our centre-left party, the Labor Party, went in with a huge lot of ideas because they thought for a very long time they were a long way ahead in the polls. But climate change has been a huge issue now in Australian politics, dating back to really 2007, when a Labor Prime Minister said it was the greatest moral challenge of our time. Australia gets huge numbers of bushfires, wildfires, floods, droughts, the rest of it. So it's always kind of in the national consciousness in a perhaps way it's not here. But every time a politician has tried to tackle this issue and put forward plans to curb emissions, carbon emissions in particular, they have pretty quickly found themselves in political strife, and it is a major reason Australia's kind of political scene has looked a bit like an episode of Game of Thrones. We've had six different prime ministers in less than a decade after going 11 years having a just the same prime minister. And Australians are fairly kind of centre-right, probably on the whole, and so it is a... It's been an extraordinary period of political upheaval, and climate change has had a huge role in that.
I'm wondering if this is a good time to mention that I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I think I still got that relevance.
Right.
Now, you mentioned that climate change is in the conscience a bit more there than it is here. Like, how different would you say that the debate is down under than the one that we see and hear here in the US?
Well, the debate in Australia is pretty simple. Australia has been a leader in certain fields. We've contributed to major wars. We've backed the United States on a whole range of things, even though we're a pretty small country, only 25 million people. We like to think that on the global stage, we do our bit. And the push for action on climate change largely centres around the fact that Australia has very high per capita emissions, and therefore we should be doing something. On the flip side, opponents of doing too much say, hang on, Australia has these enormous reserves of coal. It's made us very, very wealthy, particularly in some parts of the country. And we should keep exporting it to China and India and whoever else wants it, because the fact of the matter is that Australia is only 1.3% of global emissions. No matter how much we cut, we're not going to save the planet, save the Great Barrier Reef and that, all on our own. And the argument in the other direction has always been, we shouldn't put in a great new tax on Australians when the United States, China, India are not doing anything.
Jared, via the website the1a.org, says, instead of focusing on reducing emissions, even if this involves significant cost, the politicians should focus on adaptation. This also will be expensive, but will actually produce good results. Most of the Australian population lives close to the ocean, and they need to be protected from storms and rising sea levels. And the time to push hard on this is now.
Yes. Well, I think that that is probably why some people saw this as the climate change election. They thought that the centre-left Labor Party was in front for so long that everyone thought that now they would get an electoral mandate to go ahead and implement not as strong a climate change action as actually been proposed in the past, but some sort of plan which has eluded our national political leaders for 12 years or so now. It's really, it's so hard to express how much it's divided almost every single political party. And I think what we're going to see now is the coalition government, which won a surprise victory, a very narrow surprise victory, and defied 54 consistent weeks of opinion polling and the like. I think that they're going to move very, very cautiously. And I think that you can pretty confidently say that on this topic of climate change, Australia is not likely to be one of the leaders. But if there was movement elsewhere, I think that they would do their part. Because I think one of the interesting things that we saw in this election, and we've seen it elsewhere, there's been some comparisons. I think Donald Trump, I'm reliably informed last night, told Scott Morrison, our new Prime Minister, that he thought there were echoes of his victory and also Brexit in the Australian result. And the one thing that we did see is that in pretty wealthy conservative seats, there was a swing to the centre-left, partly because of a whole heap of tax and social issues, but also climate change definitely played a role, including in the ousting of a former Prime Minister, a guy called Tony Abbott. But in some of the regions, particularly in central Queensland, which is always a kind of very divided swing area, it can go either way, where there is a proposal to build one of the biggest coal mines in the world, they all swung very heavily to the centre-right. And in Queensland in particular, Labor was pretty much annihilated, and no one was predicting that coming into it. And that was probably the biggest shock of the night. And it is the main reason that the coalition government in Australia will have a third term.
Why did the polls get it so wrong? Why do we trust polls anymore?
So the big difference that I really have to stress in Australian politics to most other Western countries is that voting in Australia is compulsory. And our turnout is always between 90 and 95%. I think it might have even been above 95% at this election. What that does is it means that you cannot campaign on the far right or the far left. You have to go for the middle ground because everyone pretty much goes out and casts a ballot. So you're really focusing on the centre. So when I'm saying centre-left, centre-right, you should be thinking maybe Biden Democrats v. George Bush Senior Republicans. They pretty much agree on a whole range of economic issues. They agree very, very broadly on international policy, the alliance with the United States, how to deal with China. These kind of things aren't argued about. And that's why smaller issues, perhaps like climate change, are amplified in the national consciousness. On the other hand, in this campaign, Labor came in saying that they were going to reform a whole lot of tax loopholes and benefits for older Australians. The coalition said these are new taxes. This is a big taxing centre-left government. They tried to portray them as kind of socialists, or they tried to portray them as more radical than they have been in the past. And therefore, I think what we saw is a lot of older Australians in particular say, no, let's stick with the status quo. The economy, we haven't had a recession for 28 years. Why change? And I think that was a huge deciding factor. And I think in terms of why the polls got it wrong, I can't give you a good answer. A lot of pollsters have been warning for some time that the polls had been becoming less accurate, but they do have an exceptionally good record in Australia. They've picked most of the previous elections within, you know, a few kind of points of a percent. It's not like here where polls have been widely wrong in the past, and that's why this was such a shock.
So what were some of the other major issues discussed this time around? I know you mentioned earlier on tax cuts, for example. And a question, did the Labor Party expect the recent death of former Prime Minister Bob Hawke to drive more people to the polls?
Yeah, so on Bob Hawke, he was probably one of, I mean, anyone from any political perspective would look back through Australian history and probably rank Bob Hawke in their top three prime ministers. He was exceptionally popular. He was a Labor politician. He came from the union movement in Australia, but he really adopted economic reform along with a guy who succeeded him, ultimately named Paul Keating. And together they reformed the Australian economy and have been a huge part. We haven't had a recession since. It opened up the country to trade, tariffs lowered, and there's been a real consensus on that in the past. And I think what the Labor Party might have been hoping, obviously they had no idea that Bob Hawke would die at this time, he'd been sick for a while, they were hoping that the leader of the Labor Party, Bill Shorten, who also came from the union movement, might kind of have been tied to that in some way. I spoke to a couple of, in fact, I heard earlier this week from a former prime minister who said that he thought that Bob Hawke was going to have a huge impact. And he thought that would probably nudge Labor over the line, but it didn't. In terms of the other big policy issues, really tax reform. I mean, that was kind of the interesting thing, I think, looking at the last US election. The coalition had sacked two of its previous prime ministers. It was hopelessly divided on a whole range of issues, but they came out. Scott Morrison ran a very good campaign, and he basically campaigned as, I'm kind of the daggy dad of Australia. I like going to the football. I like drinking beer, eating, you know, eating pies. And I don't want to change things too much, but I want to give you all a tax cut. I want you all to get out there and have a go. And I think that the Wall Street Journal actually sums this up a little bit in an editorial in some of its coverage. And it said that there is a risk when a government is on the nose for an opposition to think that the nation's moving in their ideological direction. And I think that's kind of where the Labour Party might have got it wrong. If it had campaigned on a couple of those things, I think it probably would have got over the line. But as an accumulation of this huge reform to tax, as well as climate change, and as well as a few other social issues, I think Australians in regional parts of the country mainly sort of took a second look and went, no thanks.
And quickly, you know, after the shock of last night, which we just talked about, what are you going to focus on next in your reporting? I mean, are you and other Aussies, are you exhausted at this point?
After the campaign, I think it's really interesting because the coalition didn't really come in with a huge agenda. It said we're going to do tax cuts. So it does have kind of a clean slate. I think what a lot of people are hoping in Australia is that so many prime ministers have been turned over. There's been such political turmoil, and yet the economy has been doing pretty well. And I think a lot of Australians are hoping for a kind of period of relative stability. What was significant in the results was that...
Briefly, was that
one former prime minister who had caused a lot of the division within the coalition lost his seat, and a lot of others said, we are really going to now back Scott Morrison. So I think most Australians will be hoping for a period of relative calm.
Next up, we'll speak with Senator Tom Cotton. Lots to discuss, including why his time serving in the Army as a funeral escort at Arlington National Cemetery left such a lasting mark. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.